Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 605 for comics originally released on March 13th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Superman number 9. We've both been reading Superman for the entire Bendis run, which admittedly isn't that long.
Yeah, and the ones before that, which we liked.
Yeah, I've been reading Superman off the rack for decades. Fun character, and this has the... right there on the cover, the Wrath of the Crime Syndicate.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of the JLA-JSA crossovers, and the Crime Syndicates, they were one of the go-to villains and stuff, because it's the evil Justice League.
Yeah. And this is my first experience with the Crime Syndicate, but it was very easy to get up to speed with this comic.
Yeah. They're a simple concept. They're the Justice League, but evil.
Oh, yeah, and Bendis explains it very well. He gives you the whole background. You're like, oh, okay, cool. One page, done.
Did you not read the Forever Evil stuff?
I did not.
Okay. They were in there and well used.
Oh, okay. But I did, I think I picked up a hardcover of that stuff.
Okay, cool. My thoughts going into this issue is that Bendis has been doing a pretty solid job with the Superman property, both here and in Action Comics.
I agree.
I'll admit I'm a bit puzzled, as we talked about last week, by the decision to age John Kent up better part of a decade.
Yeah.
But it seems to be working, so I'll give him that.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed, but it's okay. So far it hasn't, you know, cheesed me off too much.
Yeah, it's not a bad decision. It's just he was a fun character before, and the dynamic he had with Damian is going to get destroyed by this, I think.
Me too, because unless they age Damian, and I don't want to see Damian age because I love that character.
I do want to see the older John meet up with Damian, and because I think Damian would not take that well.
I agree. I want to see that. Maybe that'll be the next volume of the Super Sons.
Or something, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Overall, I enjoyed this issue, but with some reservations.
Okay.
The opening kind of dream sequence thing...
That I was reading it and I was wondering, did I not remember last issue well? I'm like, what's going on here? But then it changed. But that was weird.
It kind of reminds me of the sort of thing that John Byrne would do to kind of humanize Superman a little back when he took over ages ago.
Okay,
you know, little bits here, like this is essentially, you know, an aspect of Superman. Yeah, he's not human, but he's more human than we thought, kind of thing.
Which, yeah, it was cool, but I didn't see the purpose or, you know, why he's doing this.
Yeah, it felt gratuitous and sort of pointless, and I wasn't sure why either.
Yeah, I mean, it's a waste of 4 pages, and when you're looking at a 20-page story, you're like, okay, well, there's 20% of the story was wasted on a dream sequence that doesn't seem to impact the story at all.
I would say it was a little bit more than... A few more pages than that, but it was a significant chunk of the issue, more so than it needed to be.
Yeah.
Because really, it takes a little ways into the issue for John to get back to telling his story of what happened to him while he was gone.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of weird. And that was the part that I really did like about this issue, is because when John started getting into it, they had that little breakdown of the crime syndicate,
mm-hmm.
which to me was so accessible because he gives you kind of the background, here's what they are, and you're just laid it out for a new reader.
Yeah, my disappointment was I felt we really didn't get a whole lot of the crime syndicate. We mainly got Ultraman.
Yeah, just the one character. Although you see the other ones, they did not talk about them at all.
Yeah, and it's like, well, if it had been the Wrath of Ultraman on the cover, okay, that's fine.
Yes.
But it was the crime syndicate, and I'm like, okay, so we just get the one. And the characterization of that one was a little weird.
Yeah, I agree. How was it weird for you?
Well, this whole bit of he would just come and he would talk to John.
Like a total psycho, yeah.
Well, and then start sobbing.
Yeah, that was so bizarre. I was like, is this normal for the crime syndicate? I'm like, what is this?
Not really, and...
I think they pretty much establish it here that in this world, Ultraman kind of rules the world.
Yeah, he's the top dog.
And he's a crying mess?
That's the same question I had, because I was watching that and I was like, he's obviously, I guess, the person in charge of this world, and he just seems to totally not have it together. He's a loose cannon. He's emotionally unstable. It was just so bizarre.
The loose cannon I get, and the not particularly bright I get, because he's a bit of a thug. It's all he's ever had to be. But breakdown and cry in front of John sort of a thing, I don't know, it was weird.
Yeah, it came off kind of weird to me, too. And I just assumed this is the way the guy was. So, you know, without having a background in it, I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's how he is.
Not in any previous version of the character that I recall reading.
Okay, and that makes it weirder. I thought it was weird without even knowing the background.
Yeah, it was weird. Kind of what happens with John is interesting, but just as his story gets going, oh, time for a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and it didn't have to be like that, except he wasted all the pages on the dream sequence at the beginning. So, yeah, now it's building up to the maybe we'll see some of the other things that happen with other members of the crime syndicate, so maybe we'll see something along those lines. And the way that when John's explaining the story to his dad, I could see his dad wanting to take out wrath on these other, you know, characters.
Yeah, but even that felt a little out of character for Superman. He's always the turn the other cheek.
It really did. He was like totally like ready to lose it. I was like, okay, that's the part that seemed a little bit weird to me too.
Well, and it's something that was even in a previous issue or two where it's like he's got to go out and smash something now.
Yeah.
I get the anger, but as Superman, he's always kind of sort of been a little above that.
Exactly. So it just seemed a little bit off. It's not bad. It just seemed off from things that I've read previously.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It wasn't bad. I'm expecting the next issue. Obviously, we'll get more with one particular crime syndicate member. But after that, I'd be surprised if we see much of the others at all.
Yeah, depending on how it plays out and depending on if Dad wants to exact some revenge, we probably won't see any more, I wouldn't imagine.
I think they can come back for Superman's, you know, reckoning or whatever, but in terms of what happens with John, the character of Superwoman here at the end, okay, it makes sense for him to deal with that. Owlman would be the only other one that it really makes sense for him to have any sort of an encounter with.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, because I don't see the Green Lantern character playing into it or any of the other ones that are in there.
And I would only do Owlman if they had a riff with Damian to do.
Okay, yeah. I could see that.
I don't expect them to go that way, but you never know.
Yeah. So, I mean, this issue, it was like, it was weird because there were some things that I really liked about it, and then there was other things that were a little bit off-putting. I don't know the direction that he's taking John in this. I don't know if I'm going to like the mature John going forward. I mean, I'm still kind of like the jury's out on this Superman title right now with the changes that are happening.
Yeah. I mean, I'm liking the story. I just continue to question the wisdom of aging up the character the way they did.
Yeah, and especially someone that's so beloved like this, you know? I mean, for me, he was a very charming character, you know, a very good, wholesome character to counterbalance that Damian, and I like the play off the two of them. So with him being so much older and maybe, you know, when someone's background, which he's going to discuss in this comic for those who haven't read it, it could change the character, I would think, with stuff that's happened in here.
Oh, it's got to change the character. He's about not quite twice as old as he was, but I mean, significantly older.
Yeah, significantly older, and now his life experience has changed because of what he's been through. He may not be the same character.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I want them to keep this version around because I like the John Kent character, but it's a shame because of what they did with Nightwing, they don't really have the opportunity to take this John Kent and pair him with the Batman to Damian's Robin.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true.
I mean, there's a lot of things they could have done there.
And it seems like something that can't be fixed very easily. I mean, I don't know how you, if they suddenly said, hey, we want to have the young John, we don't like this. I don't think another writer could jump on and reverse this.
Oh, I think they could. I think they shouldn't. That kind of a reset button or undo button is a bad idea to push.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, Bendis is known for shaking things up. He does weird things and he does big things. I mean, when he left Marvel, he had turned Iceman from basically the playboy into a gay character.
Yeah, which I thought was totally out of character for that character, too. But what you gonna do?
Exactly. Bendis gets to do what Bendis wants to do.
Yeah, to me, this cliffhanger, you were saying it's, you know, they had to leave it there because if they wasted the previous couple of pages at the beginning, I saw it as almost the reverse. They okay. wanted to end here, therefore they had to waste the pages at the beginning to get here.
That could be. Maybe there was, I mean, there's only so much of that story and the rambling that you want to hear. But possibly, maybe that's why he stuck the dream sequence in there, which it's kind of sad that he couldn't flesh out the story more.
I hope I'm wrong on that, but, I mean, some other subplot could have been in there or something.
Yeah, because I read that beginning, you know, a couple times, and I was just like, and I kept looking, I'm like, what does this have to do with the story? And then I just came to the realization, I'm like, this has nothing to do with the story. It's literally just wasted space.
Unless it plays in later, and it might. It may be some kind of, he's seeing the future somehow. It's like, really? That seems weird.
Yeah. Well, I will hope that that's what he did.
We'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but it's a good story. It was not the most fulfilling of issues, unfortunately, and I wanted a little more than I got. It felt like it was paced more for the trade than the single issue, but I enjoyed the story.
I would agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly. I would finish with saying, me being a newer reader, I liked the introduction of the crime syndicate, the way that he did that. It was very friendly to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know more about the characters now, the way he presented them. Even though we didn't see very many of them, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. And I'm hoping that we see, of course, we're going to see the other character that was at the end of the book. I'm hoping that maybe there's a broader story there with the other crime syndicate characters.
I hope so. Because we're not really seeing a whole lot of the multiverse of late, and this is a good place to use it.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to see it. I want to see that confrontation. I want to see, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys with people with their own powers. That's always a cool thing to see.
I would actually find it interesting if they did a crime syndicate series where it's almost a reversal of the typical superhero supervillain thing. Yeah, they're the evil Justice League, but they're kind of outnumbered by hundreds of, in their world, supervillain or superheroes, whatever it would be, kind of a thing.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
If we got to see the reversal of the story where these you know, equivalent of the real villains or whatever are basically trying to just chip away at the crime syndicate one by one, you know, and there is a master plan the heroes just don't know about or something.
Yeah, I would be on board for that. I would definitely read it.
Could so be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. So hopefully it happens. Maybe
we'll
you can write it.
Yeah. I need a better writer than me for that, but I think it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a B on this. Like I said, it was a good story. I like what they're doing. I do have some questions. I did think some of it was weird, but Bendis is doing a good job.
Yeah. One other weird thing. That was weird that pigs were being flown in for supper, which people will see what I mean when they get to that. That was so weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of like you, but I was a little bit more generous. I was originally going to give it a B, but then I liked the way that he was so super user-friendly or new reader-friendly with the introduction of the crime syndicate for the first time he's writing them, that I give him a B+ for doing that.
Yeah, I think the accessibility is good. For me, it didn't faze me either way because, I mean, I knew exactly who the crime syndicate was, but they should not expect that.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
Cool. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sounds like a plan. Let's do this.
Yeah, this is Uncanny X-Men Winter's End number 1. And this was kind of sort of a one-shot, but also kind of sort of, I guess, the end cap to the recent Iceman miniseries based on the letter page here.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I think there was a couple Iceman miniseries because I think the sales on it were pretty poor.
It was a miniseries, but it had an actual series, I think, last year that lasted only slightly longer than the miniseries.
Exactly, yeah. It felt like miniseries, one-shot. I was like, okay, we've had enough of this now.
Yeah, it's like they had a game plan and the sales just clearly weren't there, which I get.
Yeah, I kind of get it, too. I mean, Iceman is not a top-tier character. I mean, he's been there since the beginning, but and then with the change-up, I mean, it's just gotten kind of weird because he's not the character that I used to read.
Well, he's a foundational character of the Marvel Universe as one of the original X-Men.
Yes.
And is a A-list character in that respect, but A-list is part of a team.
Yes, not on his own.
Not on his own, and he was never really used on his own. He's always kind of hanging out the X-Men mansion or pining that he's not there kind of a thing.
Exactly. He was kind of like the Johnny Storm from the Fantastic Four of the X-Men, you know, but ice. I mean, yeah. He has that fun sensibility. He was kind of playboy. He was – now he's kind of different, and which is – but it's this got more serious. I think this issue got kind of serious in here.
Yeah, it did. It just, I'm getting a little tired of the Iceman having to constantly prove himself to both himself and others.
Yeah, it seems so on the nose and forced. And I'm just like, I think Cena Grace, I don't know how you pronounce that guy's name, but I'm tired of reading his Iceman. I would like to have somebody else write it.
Is Cena Grace a man or a woman?
I had no clue, so I went to Google and I typed in Cena Grace, and it's a dude.
Oh,
it's a guy.
Okay, did not know.
I thought it was a girl. So I was surprised because I thought for sure it was a girl. I was like, oh, let me see what this person's written while we're doing a review. And I was like, ah, it's a guy, and it's a younger guy. I mean, not young, but like, let's say 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at it, and I was just like, but I noticed the art in here was really clumsy. And then I felt like, I don't know if you know this or not, did they change how Dokken is as a person in this, or is that how he's always been?
They did not change.
Okay, I didn't remember, so I was just like, is that the way he... I just didn't know.
Equal opportunist is the way I would phrase him.
Okay, gotcha. All right. That's the best phrasing. Because I just remember him like kissing girls in the past and stuff. I was like, what changed here?
It's something that they've touched on a time or two, but never really harped too much on.
Okay, so we're not getting another character change in here. That's okay.
No, not really. But, I mean, to me, the whole having Iceman come out of the closet when they did it, it felt forced. It felt counter to what had been done. It was, I guess, a legitimate take on the events we had seen. It just felt like somebody was reading more into them than had been on the page.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. So now, back on to this story, this felt so awkward of a story to me. You know, you start off with that weird thing with the big giant Iceman kind of helping people in a flood, and then you got to have the mutant hater out there, and then it automatically just switches gears to just almost rambling nonsense.
Well, particularly when the older version, Ice Master, I guess is what he's called,
yeah,
comes back inexplicably. It's like, how did he come back? At first, I was thinking this is like Mystique just messing with Bobby again, but no, it was actually him from the future. And
yeah,
he
back again.
Yeah, he goes and just gives a huge amount of exposition on what had happened this time in the future.
Yep.
And it felt like that was kind of most of the story that was in the issue, was that exposition.
Exactly. It was so weird. I was just like, I knew this was a one-shot, and I felt like it felt so boring to read.
Yeah, it did.
I hate to say that, but I was bored when I was reading it.
Well, I think the comment you made about the art being a little clumsy, I think also applies to the story in general.
It felt awkward, didn't it? Just like, okay, from this scene to this scene to this scene, it just like going through motions, and I was just like, and not very eloquently, not very put together very well. It was just weird, just random stuff happening just to fill out the pages.
Well, it was like there was another couple of issues planned for the Iceman series, and it just kind of got reworked into this, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. And I think that really comes down to the sales just aren't there. And, you know, they need to stop with these Iceman books because, you know, we've been doing that for a year and nobody's buying them.
Yeah, I think they just had a bad concept to take a team X-Men member, force him into a solo book a few times. And he's had miniseries like in the 80s. He had one then, and it was all right.
Yeah.
But it was him on a solo kind of a mission or whatever. I forget the details of it, but it wasn't him as Iceman without the X-Men.
Correct. And I would say the best thing about this book, and I don't know about you, but I mean, the only thing that seemed like it had anything in there was the one discussion, you know, maybe over halfway through the book where Jean kind of shows up and there's the confrontation about how she had handled his coming out.
Yeah, but kind of, sort of, she didn't.
She didn't, correct. Yeah, she kind of messed up a little bit. She said something, but...
Well, the younger version of her from the past after having been in the future for a while, experiencing different things. Did that to the younger version of Bobby or whatever. So really, these two, to a certain degree, never actually had those experiences, even though they kind of did. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It was so weird. But I mean, that's the only thing where I felt like the writer was kind of writing with where he wanted to convey a story, because before that, everything felt like filler. Everything after felt like filler. And I was just like, man, I wouldn't recommend people to buy this unless you're really, really a hardcore Iceman fan, because it's just not a very well-written story.
I would agree with that. I mean, really, it comes down to, unless you're a huge Iceman fan, you don't need to read this. And if you are, you've already read this.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's not going to impact anything going forward, I don't think. The way it just kind of wraps up the tail end of that Iceman miniseries, and it really has no impact on anything, to me, in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I guess for me, you'd made a comment a minute or two ago about, you know, the nature of the story and whatnot here. I don't know if Cena Grace was so much telling a story or using a story to almost push an agenda.
That's what it felt like to me. And which was weird, because I understand in its platform, but it felt like I was reading someone on a soapbox.
Yeah.
Just saying, here's the thing I want. And that's the way all the Iceman series that he was writing felt like. It's like, here's a thing, I'm in your face, and whatever, you know, I don't care one way or another. I really don't. But it seemed like he did it so heavy handed that I'm like, okay, I get it. This is what you want to talk about. But not every issue has to be that, you know, you can have a story beyond that, that me being the way I am does not encompass me every facet of my life or how I'm here, you know?
There are some writers that have been able to very closely identify with aspects of a character and pull that personality out of them and really get some great stories and stuff, because they can really get in sync with that.
Yeah.
This felt more like the character has been, and not just strictly through this author, but again with Bendis and other stuff, been maneuvered such that it could be used as a vehicle for telling a particular story versus it's part and parcel of the history.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I really don't care either way if they make Iceman gay and that's a big part of the story and stuff. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's been so monotonous of a story, both with this and the miniseries and such, that I'm like, is this all they can do with Iceman now?
Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't want to read Johnny Storm. I know he's a playboy and he likes to date girls, or let's say Daredevil, you know, hook up with lots of the ladies. I don't want to read that for 6 straight issues. Mm-hmm. I don't want to read that for the next 6 straight issues. And I don't want to have it wrapped up with a one shot where he's just hooking up with a ton of girls and look at me. You know, it's the same thing. It's okay, I've had enough. Let's talk about some heroics or some character building or something. Yes, just give me something other than, okay, yeah, I appreciate it. And I'm like you. I really, I could care less, because there's a lot of gay characters in the Marvel U and the DCU, and I don't care. And I read them and I like them. I still like Iceman as a character, but I don't like Cena Grace as a writer.
That's kind of what it's starting to come down to for me. This changed my opinion of the writer, and not for the better.
That's kind of where I am. I'm like, okay, I don't want to read any more of his books if this is what he's I mean, it's like, okay, I've read enough.
I'm not quite to that point, but it's certainly going to make me look twice at a new title if Cena Grace is the writer.
Yeah, it would be a tough sell. And I would like to see, actually, I want to see him write something that's not Iceman, to see if he actually is a good writer, maybe, when he's not on the soapbox. Because maybe he does have a good voice, but, you know, he has a message he wants to get out. Okay, now you got the message out. Let's put you on a book over here. Let's put you on Wolverine. I'm not saying I want to see him on Wolverine, but let's put him on this character. How do you write that?
Yeah, I'd like to. This is not the book to judge Cena Grace by, because it really makes Iceman seem, it hits all of the overplayed one note aspects of the character.
Yeah, yeah.
Gay, exactly. And I can't get over that. A bit of a loser of an X-Men, can't get over that, but happens to be an Omega level power that just can't quite handle the power or use it to the best of the ability and stuff. We've seen all of these notes before.
Yeah.
And here, exactly. They're just kind of thrown in here as a cacophony of noise.
Yes. And it just, you're feeling it, I'm feeling it. this is like really like I was saying at the beginning, it's a book that I would not really recommend for anyone, because I think they would, if this was a new comic reader and this was the first thing they read, they'd be like, man, comics just suck. I don't want to read this stuff anymore.
To me, this is also on the editors, of which there's an assistant editor, an editor, and an X-Men senior editor, plus an editor-in-chief listed. And I'm not saying they all would have had, you know, eyes on this book or whatever, but it's a one-shot. You know, it's already taking place. This is before Uncanny X-Men number one or whatever, so it's already kind of a dated story, which doesn't help it any either. You could have held it off a little longer to actually polish it up a little bit.
Yeah, done something.
I was disappointed with this.
Me too.
And as we've been talking, I've been actually, you know, double checking my rating. It's like, do I really think it's that way or not? And I'm actually going to go lower than I had been. I'm going to go with a D+, because there's really not a whole lot that's redeeming about this, unfortunately. It's not horrible. It's not, oh my God, bad. But it felt like a filler story that was clumsily done. And I expect better out of the creative team and out of Marvel.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I almost rated this a D, because I was just like, I just really didn't like it. But I mean, it's not broken. It's not broken. It just seemed like heavy-handed with the writing. The art was horrible. I was like, okay, I'm done with this book. But I gave it a D+ because I liked one little interaction in there with Jean Grey, and I thought, yeah, I'll give it a notch up for that. So I went with the D+ as well.
Yeah, I was hoping for a lot better than this.
Yeah, me too. I was like, okay, well, this is kind of like the capstone of this story with Bobby that I wasn't really, you know, captivated by that. I was just hoping that maybe there'd be some setup for something bigger, and you know, Bobby would be like, okay, this is who I am, and you know, I'm all powerful now, and here's my future. But no, it's more just a filler.
It could have been a celebration of everything Iceman could be. Just but doesn't not. Have the room in the X-Men to be.
Yeah, exactly. But womp womp, it's not that.
Nope, it's not. Oh well.
Exactly. Next.
Well, with that, we'll move on to our other book, which is Little Bird number 1 from Image Comics.
Yeah.
Honestly, I knew nothing about this prior to us picking it, other than it was Little Bird number 1 from Image Comics.
Oh, okay. I saw it in previews, and I was like, I'm going to get this because it looked cool, and the premise looked cool to me.
I read the press PDF because the premise didn't sound particularly cool to me, but it's like, you know, hey, I'll try new things, see what it's like.
Yeah.
And then there was in the solicit, oh wow, the incredibly detailed, the breathtakingly detailed artwork of the gorgeous, hyper-detailed miniseries Little Bird. I'm like, well, at least we'll have some really good art. Yeah, it wasn't to my liking. I'm not going to say it wasn't hyper-detailed or anything. I didn't care for it.
Yeah, it's definitely different art style. It reminded me of, I've read some European comics. It looks like a European comic to me, which is...
Yeah.
Which is weird. Did you get the same vibe?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it until you phrased it that way. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
It felt very Euro to me, and but I've kind of been in a Euro mode right now, so I was like, okay, it's not, you know, like the clean lines that I normally like, but it was okay. It was cool. I knew you wouldn't like some of the gruesome stuff that was in there.
Yeah. Well, and just the way the story started off. Oh, there's an attack coming, and they make it sound like. Because this is in the Rocky Mountains in Canada, like it could be, well, I guess they're, you know, Native Americans or Indians or whatever the correct term is today, that there's, you know, this is set back in time, and it's their equivalent of what happened when the Canadian equivalent, I guess, of cowboys came, and it didn't go well for the Indians and stuff. Maybe it's like that. Turns out it's kind of nothing like that, because it's an alternate future, maybe, kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like where the very religious extreme right has taken over in the political world.
Yeah. It went from, again, me having no clue what was going on to me making some bad assumptions to, you know, then Little Bird is quickly left in this underground bunker of, oh, just stay there and stick to the plan. I'm like, well, geez, I wonder what the plan is. It turns out it wasn't very interesting. and it just, I never really connected with the Little Bird character, which is probably just as well. And I never really connected with anyone else in the story. I just it got gory in places. I didn't care for the art style. It's not for me, and I'm not trying to say this as it's a bad book.
Yeah.
But, because there are going to be people who absolutely love this.
Yes.
I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, what was weird is me, I loved parts of this. And there's other parts I was like, okay, this is weird and I don't understand what's going on. But there was parts of it that I really loved. Like, I love the premise of the story. I think if you were super sensitive to like religious stuff, some of it may be a little bit offensive to you, but it's done in a way where it's not going to offend, I think, most people. It's a made up New Vatican, basically, you know, that's the bad guys, mm-hmm. you know, or the ultra right wing religious group that's kind of taken over and doing bad stuff. But I kind of liked Little Bird. I didn't connect with her, like you said. The part that it got weird for me was when you start seeing the New Vatican and all those weird things. Like, I'm like, okay, why is this obese nun floating in a ball of fire? What is this?
That's where it's on? Like, clearly this is not some sort of alternate history thing.
No, I'm like, this is so weird, like techno religious futuristic weird stuff that, but it felt very Euro to me at the same time. I was like, okay, this is something I could read in a European comic.
Yeah, and maybe it's just more brilliant than I'm ready for or something, because if I look at the solicit, director-screenwriter Darcy Van... man, I'm going to butcher that name, aren't I? Paul Geist, we'll say, and I apologize for mispronouncing. Boasts a long list of awards and accolades for his storytelling prowess and brings the same writing finesse to Ian Bertram's breathtakingly detailed artwork in the gorgeous hyperreal miniseries Little Bird. With the same limitless scope as a new East of Wester saga and the drama and surrealism of Akira, Little Bird follows a young resistance fighter who battles against an oppressive American empire and searches for her own identity in a world on fire. That sounds pretty damn impressive.
Yes, it did. They sold me on that solicit. But you get to it, and it's there, but it's very weird. The part where I really liked it was the part that I'm sure you didn't like. I liked the character Axe.
I didn't mind the character Axe. There were a few things leading up to it, like how did she get what she needed to get in there?
Yes, that was not explained, I didn't think.
And when Axe actually gets swinging the axe, there's a fair amount of blood and gore and such.
Yes.
And not even just with him and the axe. I don't know, there was... that was where it's like, this is not the kind of story for me.
That's what I was getting when I was reading it. I was like, I got halfway through this, I was like, I think John's going to hate this book.
Well, it's funny because even... if I hadn't been completely turned off by that point, we hit the one thing where there's a decisive moment for Little Bird.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, even if I might have been coming back because I'd connected with Little Bird or whatever, it's like, I'm out.
Yeah, I knew reading this, which is weird, this was not going to hook you. You were out. Now, on the flip side, I'm some kind of weirdo. You know, I like this oddball stuff. I like some European comics, not all of them. This was not like one of my favorite comics, but I really enjoyed some of the stuff in here. And I'm on for the ride. If hopefully it doesn't get too weird. What I mean by that is like, I had no clue what was going on with like I said, some of the stuff in the middle of the story when they're showing this religious empire. I was just like, okay, this is kind of weird. I'm like, well, why is there an obese nun floating in a ball of fire? Why is that happening? Why are there little floating babies around this person? None of it's explained. They're just talking like everything's normal. I'm like, what the heck am I looking at?
There comes a point where I ask myself that enough times that it leads to the follow-up question of, and why should I care?
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I know where you're coming from.
And it came down to, I didn't.
Yes, I did not think you would. So now me, I would say I like the Little Bird stuff. I like the Axe stuff. The stuff with the religious stuff in the middle, I didn't care for that as much. If you don't mind very gruesome stuff, if you like European comics, you may find this pretty cool.
Well, and I think that's a lot of it. It's very European, like you said, and that's just, generally speaking, not my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. It's just, for me, this was a misfire on multiple levels. I didn't really get into the story at any point, and... bottom line is I'm not going to be back for more.
Yeah, I kind of figured. And so Although I would say I'm sad. I'm not really that sad because I don't think it was made for you. No, it was
absolutely not. That, and it's fine.
Yeah, it was made for someone like me and even people a little weirder than me who like really obscure things. I think Drew will love this. Your old co-host, Drew. He would probably find this really cool.
Probably. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's fine.
And yeah, me, I found it like parts of it really cool to where I'm on board for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and again, so, different things for different people, and that's one of the great joys about comics is there's so much stuff out there. There's something for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So this, I would say, I would call it a very obscure, weird, gruesome, yet for me, engaging book. And if you are turned off by religious tones and not shed in the best light, or you're turned off by goriness, you know, people being disemboweled with an axe, or you're turned off by, you know, just weirdness, just random weirdness, this is not the book for you.
Yeah.
But if you like that stuff, it could be cool.
Well, that sums it up. I don't like that stuff, so it wasn't cool for me.
Yeah. Pretty much in a nutshell.
So I'm going to go with a D on this. I went in with what I thought was an open mind and such. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah. It was a little too weird for me to make it in like an A category. It's not like that. But I went with a B for me. I enjoyed it. I thought it was above average. And if you, like I said, if you're into the stuff that I like, you might like this.
Cool. Well, I'm glad it worked for you.
Cool. All right. Well, that was kind of an interesting pick. We had Superman going one way, and then we had X-Men that we hated, and then we had Little Bird.
Amazingly disappointed in, I think, is the better way to phrase it.
Yeah. Bored to tears. And then we had this weird comic. So anyways, are you still making progress with your stack and getting caught up?
I am. I read about 55 comics since we last recorded, and I'm now down to about 48 or so left to read, plus whatever comes this week that I haven't even looked to see how big of a week it's going to be.
Well, if it weren't for C2E2, you probably would get caught up this week then.
I would say so. Definitely if it wasn't for C2E2, I think I would.
Yeah, so congratulations. Maybe you'll get caught back up after like a week and a half of being back or something like that.
I don't know because we've got C2E2 this weekend as we record this past weekend as people are listening to it. Matter of fact, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, the Monday the 25th, if all goes well, I am standing in Cowabunga talking with Eric and James.
Oh, I wish I was there. I had to hire 3 new employees. I'm training them. It's like such a mess. But I got a promise from my wife, and I told her, I was like, next year I'm going to go, and hopefully you go too, because I want to hang out with you guys.
Yeah, be fun.
Yeah, and get to meet you in person. We've been doing this stuff co-hosting, and we've never actually met.
Yeah, definitely would like to do that. But C2E2, then a weekend off, maybe to catch up on some stuff, maybe not. And then the following weekend, I'm off to Power Morphicon Express in the Houston area.
Oh, so that's going to put you behind, but you love Power Rangers.
Yeah, so it should be fun.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. So which one are you looking forward to more, C2E2 or Power Morphicon?
Both for different reasons.
Okay.
A lot of people I want to see and stuff at C2E2, and it's a great comic book convention.
Yeah.
It's big enough to have tons of stuff, yet small enough you can actually get towards people, talk with them, and stuff like that. And it's
cool.
Not, at least when I went a couple of years ago, it was not the overwhelming experience that San Diego can be.
How many people normally go to that thing?
That's a great question.
No clue?
Not off the top of my head. I was thinking in the 65,000 range, but I'm doing that off the top of my head, and I could be wildly mistaken. It's probably more than that.
So for it not to feel too jam-packed, it must be a big convention center then.
It's a big convention center, and it's McCormick Place, which is not small. And they use the space well.
Oh, cool, cool. Awesome.
And it's just got an enormous artist alley.
Nice, nice. So is there anyone in particular you're looking forward to meeting?
Not that really comes to mind. There's a lot of listeners and other podcasters and stuff like that that I'm hoping to hang out with and such. A ton of panels I want to go to.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see how many I actually make it to, because sometimes I just get lazy. Because it can be a little bit of a hike to some of the panels.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, you know, that's the fun thing, you know. With your new view on life, I would call it, you know, you kind of like cut back on comics, you're reading what you really like, mm-hmm. but also you don't have to do it all, you know. You go to a convention, enjoy yourself. You want to be lazy, be lazy.
Exactly.
it's a good way to live life. Do what you want to do. Don't kill yourself, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely trying to do that. But then at Power Morphicon Express, I'm thinking I may do a little more spending there.
Ah, is that where you're going to buy, what, toys, or...
That's what I'm hoping to. It depends what's there that I don't have, so I've been spending a little time just trying to update my inventory of all the Power Rangers and Super Sentai toys I've got, and that'll be one of the things I do in the weekend in between conventions.
Yeah, because I think you said you had gone by the local, I can't remember if it was Walmart or something, and they had no toys that you there.
Well, yeah, because it's just that odd point between kind of who has the license for the Power Ranger toys that all the Bandai USA stuff is out of the stores and the Hasbro stuff hasn't kicked in yet.
Ah, okay. So maybe you'll get the Hasbro stuff early at the Power Morphicon.
Well, that I've actually pre-ordered from Hasbro directly.
Oh, cool.
I'm very happy with them. It's more the older toys and like the Super Sentai stuff, because I think I've got most of the various morphers and stuff for Power Rangers.
That's got to be a massive amount of like characters.
Well, I don't get all the action figures. I get the actual, you know, changing devices, the morphers and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Not that I don't have a fair number of action figures, too. Last count, and this is years ago, I had over 1,000 action figures.
Oh, my God. Do you have a picture of that on the website?
No, I don't, because I don't really have them in a manner where I could get that kind of photo.
They're just kind of boxed up?
Some of them are boxed up, some of them are in a closet, some of them are in another closet, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
I do have photos of some of them on the website, and I'm working towards updating the photos of the Japanese morphers and such, but there's a lot of them, so it takes a little while to do that.
Man, that's an impressive collection.
I accumulate stuff with the best of them.
Which is why you need the new house.
Yes, I need more space. I actually had one of the toys that I couldn't find for about a week, and I'm like, geez. It's funny, because one of the episodes that'll be going up soon is the collector box light, and I did a segment on the last season's Sentai toys, and there was one of them I had misplaced.
Oh!
I'm sitting there recording with my sister. I'm like, then there's another one that should be right here. It must be upstairs somewhere. And I, you know, after we were done recording, I come up, look for it, couldn't find it for a couple of days. Found it, but it was annoying.
It was buried in the 1,000.
Something like that.
That's hilarious.
But both should be good conventions. They're just very different types.
Cool. Well, I hope you have fun at both of them. And next year at C2E2, I'm going to make it my mission. I'm going to go up there. Because I've only gone to comic conventions here locally. I've only gone to MegaCon here in Orlando. And I went to a one in Tampa when I was a kid, but it was tiny. You know, there was hardly anyone there. It was back when conventions were just like comic books and stuff like that.
Well, and there's different size conventions. And C2E2 is definitely a regional one that a lot of people go from, you know, all over to. And then there are other ones. And I'm expecting Power Morphicon Express to be more of the kind of, you go from either that city or the next city over, but maybe not a whole lot further than that.
Well, that's cool.
But
and
we'll
actually,
out.
I think Mike from the forums, or from the Slack channel, he's been posting pictures. He's already there.
Yeah, he's in Chicago and already ton of photos up.
Yeah, he showed a picture of the pizza. I was like, oh my gosh, that's massive. But then there looks like they're having a lot of fun. They're going to like the aquarium and stuff. So he's up there having fun. So I hope you guys get a chance to meet up.
Yeah, I hope so too. Should be fun.
Yeah.
So let's see, coming up, we've got the, we just had the most recent Comic Book Page teleconference this past weekend. Good turnout.
Yeah, it was fun. We had like 5 or 6 people on there, I think.
All said and done, I think there were a total of 7 of us over the day.
Oh, 7.
Because it was Jason, Don, you, Sam, Brandon, and Kyle, and myself, with people shifting in and out over time.
Cool. Yeah, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was good discussion, a lot of fun. So we've got the next preview spotlight, let's see, 138 for the April previews will be, that deadline I think will be Monday, April 6th, because this coming Wednesday, a week from as we're recording this, but the one after this goes up, the 27th, is when previews should come out. So a week and a half after that will be the deadline. That's bright and early, that Saturday morning. Regular format, one clip per pick. We had a lot of good clips this last time, so please send in clips. Open submission policy, looking forward to all of those. There was a couple of that I picked up some stuff that I wouldn't have otherwise, so thanks. And then the following Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. Central Time will be the next Comic Book Page teleconference. We basically get on Skype and talk about whatever comes up.
Cool. Well, I'll try and be there for the next teleconference. I'll be there for the next C2E2, and I'll definitely be sending in some clips for the preview spotlight.
Cool. Sounds good. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Teen Titans number 28 from DC, Avengers number 17 from Marvel, and Lazarus Risen number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.